A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
From AccuWeather.com, this is Everything Under the Sun. It's our weekly podcast, which takes an in-depth look at stories and information that are centered on the weather and climate. I'm your host, AccuWeather meteorologist Dean DeVore, and with the help of experts from AccuWeather and around the world, we help weatherproof your life day by day. And here we are winding down in the last few weeks of winter. This is episode 13 of our winter series, in times where we bring up and discuss winter issues, but it's also the beginning of March, which happens to be National Weather Podcast Month. And since Everything Under the Sun is a National Weather Podcast, we're here to celebrate. So, my friends, it's my pleasure to tell you it's time to talk about everything under the sun. And to do that, you know, you can't have a great podcast without great executive producers. And I know I talk about them at the end every week. And we've been doing this now almost a year together.
Wow.
I know. Let's welcome in executive producers Ken Prell, who just said, wow. And I gave him executive status. I don't.
We'll take it.
Well, he's a junior executive.
I'll take it.
Andrew Robb. And it's hard to believe, gentlemen, that, you know, we started this towards what? It was the end of March, the last week or so of March, yep, into April, that we started back on Everything Under the Sun. Initially, the COVID focus that we were talking about, the weather and COVID. And then we decided, well, this is the kind of thing that we really need to do, is talk more in depth about stories. And it's been an amazing year, and so many great interviews and topics. Really enjoyed the last couple of weeks when we talked about Black History Month with Alan Seals, and then last week with Shelton Johnson, and, you know, all of our kind of partnership with our Mets over the last year, mm-hmm, and doing the things that we did with them. So it's been an incredible year. And, you know, the thing is, these stories sometimes just come at us a little bit out of the blue. And so let's do it this way this week. So we're each going to take a situation and something that we've seen in the last week, and you're going to tell me that that's what you want me to do a segment on. How's that?
That works for me.
So let's start. Andy, I want you to give me the thing that we want to talk about here in the first part of our first Rays of Focus segment. What's something that you saw in the last couple of weeks that you want us to talk about?
Three simple letters, Dean. POP, which stands for percentage of precipitation. There was that great story that came out the other week on AccuWeather.com, featuring the TikTok video talking about the percentage of precipitation. And I really actually want to know, because I'm not a meteorologist, I want to know what that actually means.
You know, that's an amazing topic, because I think it really becomes the basis in some ways of how AccuWeather delineated itself over the years, in terms of not necessarily talking about those percentages in numerical form, but also more so in about just the kind of the probabilistic forecast mode. And it's confusing, I know, to even me as a meteorologist. So, you know, who I think will help us out here is a gentleman who we see on the AccuWeather Network, and we've never really had on this program. So I'd like to welcome in AccuWeather meteorologist Jeff Cornish to Everything Under the Sun to talk about this very thing. So, Jeff, first, it's great to have you with us here on Everything Under the Sun. Been meaning to do this for a while. What we do when we have a guest on for the first time is we kind of try to introduce them and get folks to know them a little bit, behind the scenes stuff. So Jeff is part of our great AccuWeather Network. Jeff, you went to Penn State, right? So you graduated about 2004, I think.
I did.
Is that about right?
Yeah.
You know? Jeff, you're a Pennsylvania boy. What, you went to Methacton High School? Is that,
I did.
Did I get that? Yeah.
I'm impressed that you
know
that.
Well, you know, this is part of the show, Jeff. You got to do some research, right?
You did some homework. How about that?
So that's, for those that don't know, that's kind of an outer suburb of Philadelphia there to the north. So, you know, you probably were very AccuSavvy early on with WPVI, Channel 6, ABC,
absolutely,
and KYW, and those kinds of stuff, right?
I remember if we were in the car listening to KYW 1060, and it was close to the time that Elliot Abrams would come on. Mm-hmm. If there was the threat of snow, we would sit in the car before getting out to hear Elliot's forecast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing Bob Larson and many of you guys. Sure. It's fun to work with you now.
Well, and you know, I grew up in Lancaster, so I not only had Elliot on the York station in WSBA in New York, but then I would switch over after hearing that forecast and then go over to KYW and hear the that forecast and kind of figure it out in between. We were that much of a weather geek. And the reason I wanted to have Jeff on this week is this past week on AccuWeather.com, he did a nice piece regarding something that kind of took off a week or so ago. And it was a TikTok video from a British TV personality. Her name is Scarlett Moffat. She does most of her work for Channel 4, which is one of the big networks over there in Great Britain. And what her video was on TikTok was basically her announcement of her realization. And I put that in quotes because it's not really true when we break this down. But her realization that she thought that the 30% chance of precipitation meant that it was going to rain in 30% of the area.
Yeah.
So this is leading totally into a good discussion about probability of precipitation. And Jeff did a really nice presentation on that. But, you know, I think, Jeff, it's really kind of I wanted to break it down a little more because it's really something that AccuWeather identified early on, that kind of wording was extremely confusing to people. That they would be confused by whether or not it was about the percentage of time it was going to rain during that day or the percentage of area that it covered or that kind of thing. And so AccuWeather actually early on got away from that using words like possible or probable or likely or nearly definite or get ready, here it comes. No, but I mean, right. we tried to get away from that. And then also the other thing, because I think, as you point out in the video that we can talk about, I mean, there's so many different factors. I think it's not only how much time it's precipitating, how much area, but intensity. And then the frustrating thing sometimes is when I look at a forecast and it's already been raining and I see a forecast, it could be ours or somebody else's, that still says 60% chance. Well, my goodness, it's already rained. Why haven't they updated that? So just go what you did briefly about what it truly means. And I think you hit it. You don't want to over complicate this whole scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with you. You know, if you look at, we produce forecasts in so many different ways, and I'm a newbie here. I've only worked here for 4 years, but you guys have spent a long time here. When we have total liberty to present a forecast as we prefer,
right,
we do tend to typically avoid percent chances. Although there's certainly an appetite for that in a time and place, especially in the app. People want numerical content.
Well, so, I think that's the difference. I think we've changed the playing field. So now, and I think sometimes we struggle with this as meteorologists. I mean, before, like you said, we had a palette or a canvas where we could paint a picture with words, or in the old days, pictures that were pretty rudimentally drawn, right? And sure, stuff like that. So it was a different way of presenting. But now in the digital space, we call it more deterministic forecast. Is it going to rain? Isn't it going to rain? In that 1 hour period, if we're doing an hour by hour forecast, we got to deterministically say it's yes or no. Now, that's not the way a good forecaster you should present, because
you
could be wrong sometimes, a lot of times, if you, especially the beginning and the end of event to get timing or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's now that we're in this new digital world and we have to be more deterministic. I think that's where the percentages have had to come in more. Would you agree?
Yeah. And people love percentages, even though, you know, you look at meteorologists like to talk about the dew point, which is a great way to characterize the moisture content in the atmosphere, how it feels outside. But a lot of people in the public, now some of our listeners are very weather savvy, but some of your family and friends may love the humidity, which is not a great way to characterize moisture content in the atmosphere the way it feels, but people do love that percentage. So, you know, we need to use percent chance of precipitation at certain times. And, you know, when it comes down to it, and this is what you were asking me to kind of talk about a little bit, Dean, as you're well aware, it's really just the likelihood of precipitation falling on your rooftop for the forecast time, if the forecast applies to your address or your neighborhood. And a lot of times people overthink this. There are many different factors. Sometimes it may look kind of like what that TikTok user described, where it could be an aerial coverage type situation. I think that we're more likely to end up with the forecast that's based on aerial coverage in a summertime convective type situation, where you're going to have scattered thunderstorms. We know they're going to form.
Right.
We also know they're not going to impact everybody in, say, I don't know, Southeast Mississippi or wherever you may be. So we do tend to hide behind numbers to talk about the aerial coverage. But there are other times when we expect that the storm track is going to be the big determining factor in who sees the rain or not. And it may be that the entire region sees rain, or the storm track may shift south, and it may be a situation where nobody sees rain, and it may be 5 or 6 days out. So, you know, those two big factors that drive the percent chance of precipitation is the overall likelihood of precipitation, and then the aerial coverage is also baked into the cake there.
So it, again, and this goes back to AccuWeather wording, we try to take care of that two ways. And I think you're right. When talking about ahead of time, when you're looking at maybe more than a day out, I think more it's about the percentage chance that you're going to have precipitation. And I think what always got people is, you know, the strict definition is it's what you had to have 1/100 of an inch of rain in the area that you were forecasting for. And, you know, so many people don't understand what 1/100 of an inch of rain is. And I thought you said if you get 1/100 of an inch of rain in that area in a short amount of time, you're probably going to get a little bit of a wetness. And if you don't have any drainage, maybe a little puddle, like just a little bit of a collection that you would see, right, is about 1/100 of an inch.
Yeah, it's very, very little rain, but it's more than that what would be required just to dampen the pavement.
Right. So, and that's probably the difference between when we talk about flurries and then accumulating snow. It's kind of in that regard. So again, AccuWeather tries to talk in terms of possible or likely ahead. Then the day of, I think sometimes we revert to that as meteorologists, if we're forced to use the percentage, that if we believe it's going to rain, but it may only rain half the day or 3/4 of the day, we may use a percentage there to talk about that. But AccuWeather at times have used other words too, about like making sure we understand that, you know, clouds will build today in a thunderstorm in spots, right? That a few places will have a thunderstorm, not everybody. Or we may even say things like, you know, it's going to rain or drizzle a little bit today at times, but a lot of the day will be dry, because we have days like that where it just sprinkles or lightly rains for about 30 minutes and then the rest of the day, not a drop. So it's,
yeah. I think those words are powerful. I mean, you can paint such a much better picture verbally,
right,
than just putting a number out there with a cartoon icon or something like that.
But that's our new space, though, in a lot of things where we have to put the little cartoon icon. So, well, we appreciate all the work that you and the folks at the network do, and you and Bernie and all the crew. Thank you so much. It is. It really is.
Just like you guys, you've been doing this a long time, and we love what we do. Whether it's like talking to like a forestry person or an entomologist, the bug people are passionate about what they do. And I think in the weather, you know, we have an affliction, and it's great to get compensated to, you know, go to work and do what we love. This is a passion for a lot of us.
It's nice to have a break, though, isn't it, Jeff? This last week now has calmed down a little bit, but it looks things may be heating up as we get into next week with this new idea that there may be a pretty strong area of low pressure in the middle of the country as we get into next week. So,
yeah,
things to keep an eye out for.
And, you know, it's tough to keep a perception on things because video is so compelling and it can steer our emotions. We've had fewer tornadoes between January 1st and March 1st than any other year since at least 2005. Now, we're not breaking records, but it's been a quiet year for tornadoes. But obviously, we do expect that to change here. The La Nina setup has a correlation downstream to typically a little more than average tornado activity into the Midwest and parts of the South. And it does look like the pattern's loading up next week.
Well, Jeff, appreciate your time. We're going to talk to folks about the pattern coming ahead down further in the podcast. Appreciate your time here, and we'll check you out on the AccuWeather Network.
All right. Thank you, Dean. Good to see you guys.
All right. Jeff Cornish, thank you so much for being with us. So, Andy, what do you think now? You think you got this idea about what POP or probability?
I definitely have a better idea. I'm glad it's not 30% of some area or whatever they were saying. I had a feeling it wasn't that, but I'm glad Jeff cleared that up.
Yeah, I'm glad we got it boiled down there. So Now it's time to turn to Ken Prell. And
oh, the pressure's on.
Yeah, the pressure is on, Ken. Is there something that you've seen in the last week or so that you'd like to do a segment on?
Well, I think, you know, over the last year of doing this show, you know, one of the things that, Dean, that we worked on a lot last year was doing updates around the hurricane season. Mm. And just saw in the last week that the National Hurricane Center thinking about moving up the start of the season.
Yeah, that's that was a very hot topic. It was floated a week or so ago that the National Hurricane Center was talking about that. You know, we've had the last 6 years or so advisories out before the traditional start. The traditional start of hurricane season has been June 1st, yep. But it's been, you know, consistently the last 6 years we've had a storm to consider in May. So, yeah, that was a big topic. There was actually this past week some decision making on that by the National Hurricane Center. I think a good person to talk to about it is our content marketing manager for business preparedness. We've talked to her before. Becky DePondwin is joining us on Everything Under the Sun to talk about this possible shift in the hurricane season. So, Becky, when I saw this a couple of weeks ago that the National Hurricane Center was talking about shifting the beginning of hurricane season, which normally for meteorologists and the public has begun on June 1st, there was a lot of reaction, a lot of visceral reaction from meteorologists. I think folks were wondering if that was really a right move. I mean, the obvious answer is, well, I guess there isn't an obvious answer whether this is the right move or not. And we have a little bit of resolution as we record this here on the midweek. But just maybe some of your first reactions when you heard that the National Hurricane Center was talking about moving the start of hurricane season and what you thought about that.
So my first reaction, frankly, was good. And then my second reaction was to sort of ask, why are hurricanes the only weather phenomenon that we have set calendar dates for?
Right.
Weather does not care about what time of year it is. Doesn't care. You know, hurricanes aren't going to not occur until after June 1st. So I sort of think that the start and end date of a hurricane season is, you know, a bit arbitrary. I don't think it matters as much. I think how we communicate the impacts the hurricanes can have and the need to be prepared is far more important than any date.
I think seasons, what we may be trying to do as meteorologists and people and stuff is take something that actually has its own definition, and seasons are periods of time where things are happening, and we've always kind of, even as meteorologists, we've kind of played around with that. We talk about meteorological seasons, which we have just begun meteorological spring here at the beginning of the month of March. The astronomy spring doesn't start till March 21st. We also know that the solar spring started a few weeks ago before that. So everything's kind of a little different. I agree with you. I think if we're trying to match it up to a season, why does it have to be over a certain time period? But what did you hear as somebody who you were all for it? What did you hear as some of the people that were against it? Is it just that always that old traditionalist? Well, we've never done it that way before, so we shouldn't be doing it now. Is that kind of the main thing that you were hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I think there may be some argument that there isn't a high likelihood of storms occurring before June 1st. And really the peak isn't until, you know, September, October, maybe even August a little bit. So is there a real need for it? You know, yeah, maybe it's a bit of the why change something, you know, right. We've always done it this way. Other than that, we have had storms that have occurred before June 1st. Right. And so I see no harm in the decision that they came to start those advisories in the middle of May. I think that's fine. The more heads up we can give people. But at the same time, even when storms have occurred prior to that June 1st date, the National Hurricane Center, AccuWeather, the Weather Channel, all of these, you know, weather organizations have always kept people informed. That was never going to change.
Right. So again, yeah, it may be like always saying, well, the baseball season has to start on April 1st or all these kinds of things, right? It's just putting an arbitrary date on it. But instead of actually switching the beginning of hurricane season in earnest or actually officially moving it up from June 1st to May 15th, what the National Hurricane Center has said this week is that they will start putting out their kind of overall tropical advisories that kind of look at the potential for development and what's going on. They'll start that with whether there's something there or not on May 15th, and then continue that. And then the traditional start of the season is June 1st. Of course, you know, we could argue this at the front side. You could argue that we've seen a lot of tropical storms well past the ending date of hurricane season, even into December and January. Now we've had hybrid storms. To me, Becky, the biggest thing is it truly a hurricane? Is it truly a warm core system? Or have we gotten into a point now where we're naming things, especially at the beginning and towards the end of the season, that are more of a hybrid storm? And does that have any effect on anybody except those of us that are pure meteorologists who really have to make sure that we adhere to all the rules all the times, I guess, is something like that.
I think you hit the nail on the head with that last part of that. I don't really think the public cares what we call it. If it's impacting them, it's impacting right. them. A lot of these hybrid storms can also often sometimes be, you know, off in the ocean. And so meteorologists can get caught up in, well, is it really a tropical storm? Is it a, you know, just a cold core low, a warm core low? Like, what is it? Sandy's obviously a really, really hotly debated example of this. And I think we can look back now with hindsight and realize there was a downside to not categorizing it as a hurricane, you know, to say it was a subtropical cyclone. I think that a lot of, maybe people didn't take it as seriously, right. Because we hear hurricane and we're like, oh wow, that's a big deal. We need to make sure we're prepared for that. You hear subtropical, I've said this before, like sub in my mind, at least, means something is less than.
Less important than the main thing. Right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. So I think it all depends on, you know, what the impacts of the storm are going to be on land, on humans. But we all know meteorologists do like to sort of quibble in semantics.
No, we never see that or hear that in our office at all. I guess, I mean, then this plays into the whole naming of storms. I mean, we've chosen not to do that at AccuWeather, other than obviously the official names given by the World Meteorological Organization and then the National Hurricane Center and those things. But we've kind of gone away from naming other storms, which other folks have done. And sometimes it gets complicated, you know, a center of circulation can all of a sudden disappear for a day or so and then all of a sudden pop back up. And is that a new storm or is that really an outgrowth of the original storm? So there's just been, I think, a reluctance to name things that aren't as easily tracked. And a warm core hurricane can be much more easily tracked than other things. These are interesting subjects. Anything else? I know you are really focused on trying to make sure folks are prepared and ready as we get ready for hurricane season. It looks like, again, another situation, especially coming off of what has been a really bombastic end to winter here. We all want a little bit of a break, but it looks like, again, we need to be thinking about a busy hurricane season that's on the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we still have severe season to get through too, but you know, we're in March. If you know, hurricanes are just a couple of months away, so now would be the time to start checking things, looking at your go bag, making sure that you have the right insurance in place, especially that flood insurance is really, really critical to have if you are in an area that is likely to receive flooding from any kind of tropical system. So still plenty of time, but start looking at things.
Becky, we appreciate your time with us today, and we'll talk to you again here real soon. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dean.
Thank you, Becky, very much. Her Twitter feed is WX_Becks, BECKS. Remember, in weather shorthand, we kind of simplify in the business the word weather to WX. So it's WX_BECKS, WX_BECKS. Becky DePondwin. Got always great information on her website, her page, and you can read about all the things that she's covering and helping with on AccuWeather.com. So let's change gears. It's now my prerogative to pick out what we're going to talk about here in this third part of our first Rays of Focus segment. And I, Ken and Andy, wanted to talk a little gardening because, you know, we're in meteorological spring just by a few days now. We're also, you know, just a couple of weeks away from the vernal equinox. And so I know for me, one of the biggest surprises that I had is when that foot of snow on the ground here in State College kind of like got away. There were a lot of things pushing up in my garden I wasn't exactly expecting. So do you guys mind if we talk a little gardening with somebody else who is really involved? You know, these two executive producers we're talking about here with Ken and Andy. There's another part of our great audio team, and his name is Brian May. And not only is he a part of our amazing audio team, has been with AccuWeather as long as I have, and a little longer, over 23, 24 years. He also has his own business. And he does gardening and landscaping for folks outside of AccuWeather and has been doing that for years. So, Brian May, welcome to Everything Under the Sun here.
Thanks for having me.
We celebrate. You know, I think it's important because, you know, obviously we're up in the Northeast, so we're in a zone where we're not really wanting to get too active in planting and stuff. But there are some things I think right now, to me, that folks should be doing, you know, and getting the ground and things ready. And I know I'm panicking a little bit. So here's my first question for you, Brian.
Okay. All right.
I'm seeing a bunch of my daffodils and tulips and all of the spring stuff really pushed. And I think a few of them are 2-3 inches up. And I'm looking at my forecast and we've got some cold weather to come. Now, do I need to worry about those here in the next couple of weeks? Should I know I have a couple of extra little bags of mulch that I keep over the winter and for this kind of thing, you know, at least in my mind. Should I be covering those up a little bit in some of those, or are they okay? Are peonies and all the things that are starting to push up here in the late winter, yeah, early spring okay?
Most of those plants are fine. If you think about when they bloom, if they bloom in the early spring and they're popping up now, that's fine.
They're geared for that, right? They actually like it a little cold, right? They're like, yes. poppies, Oriental poppies like the cold. And so, yep, yeah, they're actually kind of thriving in this a little bit.
Sure. Now in one of my flower beds on the side of the house that is facing, that gets the most sun, I have some mums coming up. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little worried about those. I don't want them coming up, even though they're kind of a cold hardy plant. It's just a little too early.
It's a little too early. Yeah. Right. So maybe
something
just
like that.
Throw a little extra mulch on that, a little bit.
Sure, I'll probably go out and put some plastic over them at night when we have the really cold nights, because we still have some cold nights coming up.
We definitely do. Is it too early to start working the soil a little bit, loosening things up where I know I'm not going to disturb things that are trying to come up here in the spring?
Yes, no, not at all. The first thing I do, especially when we get a tease of these warm days, I like to head out and survey kind of how things did over the winter. One thing you want to check out is whether or not some of your limbs had any damage. If you find some, you know, like your lilacs that might have some broken limb damage from the heavy snow, you might want to prune those. You know, look out for things like that.
Look out for things that are a little diseased too. You need to, sometimes over the winter and with the moisture and stuff, they can start to rot or mold a little bit. Right. So you definitely, as you like to do through the year. I mean, it's kind of exciting though, don't you think? I mean, I'm getting excited, and you can already kind of feel it in the outdoor centers too. People are starting to get that little excitement. You see all the starters popping up and those kinds of things. Andy and Ken, do you guys have any gardening questions? I know this is my segment, but
I do. Actually.
Go ahead, Andy.
I do. Going into this season, I mainly grow outdoor hot peppers, things like that. The two words that I have questions about is soil health. Whether you're what you have to do with your soil, whether it's too many nitrites or fertilizing property. What's some good advice that you would have for, you know, early on soil care?
What are you using to start your seeds in?
Just your standard potting soil, you know, with the little Miracle-Gro things in there.
Okay, well, are you buying new containers, or are you using what you used last year?
I use old pots, and I usually buy new sprouts every season.
All right. Well, just make sure that whatever you're starting them in is freshly cleaned out and ready to go. And make sure that you're using new potting soil to start your seeds. Just don't use what you used last year. Start brand new again.
Would you have a recommendation for somebody out there that may not know what kind of potting soil to get for their first time around?
No, but you know, if you hit the garden centers, they have a pretty good description of each type of soil.
Right. It seems like Oreo cookies now. There's all kinds of different varieties. So like the potting soil tells you, like, this is for vegetables, this is for plants, this is for this. So, I mean, it takes some of the mystery out of that, right, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll point into the right direction.
There's a blend for what you're trying to grow is what you're trying
exactly.
Definitely. I would think that. Right. And maybe there's a special hot pepper blend. So why don't you you never share those with us, Andy? What's up with that? I don't understand.
What do you like? I'm growing plenty next season.
Actually, that's actually something I especially after having weight loss surgery, I got to stay away from the spicy stuff too much. So do you have anything that's less spicy, more flavorful there?
Yeah, I like to grow poblano peppers. Oh,
that's very nice. Ken, do you have a green thumb at all?
No, not at all. I'm honestly just sitting back here shocked that Andy had some quality questions here.
I know.
It only took over 100 episodes for that to finally happen.
That is true indeed. Brian, we will definitely have you on in the spring when we get to the spring series, because there's a lot to do here in a few weeks as we get ready for gardening. But I just thought for like me, you know, with that excitement and now, you know, a couple of these days here, especially here in the Northeast in this next upcoming week, are going to hit 50, 60 again. So
I can't wait.
Yeah, the spring gardening bug is in. Brian May, thanks for joining us here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I think we've done what we meant to do, right? Each of us have got to pick a subject. We might have to do this like once a series.
I kind of like this. Do
that. I'm all for it. Absolutely.
I am too. I want to definitely say thank you to the two of you, you know, as we come up on our year anniversary. And if we are celebrating National Weather Podcast Month, thanks for all that you do. And it's a family here and it's a labor of love, and we really enjoy it, and we want people to feed back. How can they feed back, Andy, to our AccuWeather podcast?
Well, you can always go to AccuWeather.com/podcast. You can check out our daily, our weekly shows. We have a few up there. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, pretty much wherever you find your favorite shows. It's all right there waiting for you.
I know we are planning, Ken, in a few weeks to do a Q&A segment with the 3Ds, Dave Dombeck, Danielle Niddle, and myself. So if you want to get in those questions early, do that now, right? AccuWeather.podcast@AccuWeather.com. And
that's right.
What are some of the other great podcasts that we feature here? I know there's a guy named Bernie Reno that does this podcast that a lot of people.
Yeah. Bernie Reno, you know, helping him produce his show every day, you know, the Weather Insider podcast. You don't want to miss that. Bernie's got all the latest breaking news every day. And then also our good pal, AccuWeather's Evan Myers. We do a daily podcast with him too, This Date in Weather History. So
it really is stuff. And not only because Evan's lived through a lot of that history. So did I say it? I didn't. I love you, Evan. I really do. But it is amazing about how weather and these big events have really kind of gone hand in hand. And, you know, we've learned that over the years from Elliot and Evan and all those folks. And it's nice to keep that going. I think it's an important tool.
And the great thing about that podcast, real short, 2 minutes long. And so you get your quick little history lesson and then, you know, be on with your day.
Good thing to play for the kids on the way to school or something like that. Well, Andy and Ken, I'm going to let you guys go edit now. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Brett Rossio about a couple of things. One thing is a kind of cloud that you see this time of year. They're called gravity wave clouds. You will probably understand once we talk about them what they look like. And you say, oh, yeah, I've seen those. And then we're going to also talk about the weather for this upcoming weekend and the week beyond. This a special edition as we celebrate National Weather Podcast Month. This is Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com.
Whether you're at home getting ready for work, packing the kids' lunch, or commuting, listen to AccuWeather Daily. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and you'll get the top trending weather story of the day every day.
And we welcome you back to Everything Under the Sun from AccuWeather.com. Again, this is our first episode in the month of March. We are episode 13 of our winter series, and we just had that nice first rays of focus segment talking about three things, including the probability of precipitation. Good discussion with that with Jeff Cornish. The possible earlier start of the National Hurricane Center's hurricane season, which we now know is going to stay the same, but we're going to get some advisories a little bit earlier in the schedule. And then a little gardening. That was my choice here on this episode, where we're also celebrating the National Weather Podcast Month. That is March. And one of the things that we like to do in this podcast in our last segment is talk about the weather for the upcoming weekend and the week ahead, as we always drop this podcast early Friday morning. And we take one of our AccuWeather meteorologists who appear on print and in radio and other places, and we kind of get them in the focus here to do that. And the person that I've chosen this week is the gentleman we affectionately call the professor. His name is Brett Rossio. And the reason I wanted Brett here is because I want to talk about something that I see a lot this time of year, and they're called gravity wave clouds. And there are those kind of undulating clouds that you see where up in the mid to upper levels, it looks like, you know, they're kind of spaced out with a little bit of the blue in between, and they kind of look cool. But to me, it tells me there must be something going on in the atmosphere, because as I've learned meteorology the way I've learned it, I've really started to try to look up at the sky more to figure out things that are going on. Right, Brett? And I think sometimes that's something we find lost in this art. Sometimes just looking out at the sky and looking out and figuring out. So this time of year, Brett, we're getting to see a lot of transfer of energy and heat, right? Yep. We've got a big fight going on. The winter weather is trying to hold on with dear life, trying to keep pushing down to the south from the North Pole. And then that warmer air is now starting to say, hey, I'm getting more solar energy. I'm getting more more warm.
You get more diabatic heating at the surface.
Right. Yeah, there's that's the professor right there. Diabetic. So I'm getting more, and I want to go farther north. And you know, all of us on the ground like that. But so what I assume is sometimes in that, when I see that, is that part and parcel of some of that transfer of the warmth and heat in certain situations? Well, I wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, really, you can see it any time of year with gravity waves. There's also something that you call it undular bore. Okay. There's many ways you can call it, but typically during the fall,
B-O-R-E, undular bore, B-O-R-E.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Not B-O-R-E-D like bored, like we were in meteorology class. Undular bore. Okay. Tell me what that is.
Yes. Yes. So basically it's a gravity wave, and you typically see them in stable environments. So basically the low levels of the atmosphere have to be stable. And you have very strong flow through it. And then it can, in this case, you can consider a mountain. This air hits an obstruction and then it's forced upward. And then you get a wave-like motion that occurs.
So we can see those when we've got air advecting or moving over a mountainous range, which is going to give that little undulation. So that can create it. But it can also be created in other parts of the atmosphere, too, that don't have that. Right. And what creates it in that situation a little higher up that we're above the boundary layer, let's say?
Sometimes it's shear. And that's why in some cases you see Kelvin-Helmholtz clouds or billow clouds, what they call them. Yeah. A lot of times it's just a result of shear. And we see that with another phenomena that you might be familiar with, undulatus osperatus.
Yeah. That's the one that sounds like a Harry Potter cloud, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm casting a spell with my undulatus osperatus right there.
Yes. And you know, it's interesting. There is a big argument that occurred, a big fight with the AMS and WMO years ago. And the AMS is very pro let's name clouds. There's so many different types. This is another type of gravity wave that occurs. And, you know, it's kind of political. And finally, in 2017, they named it, the WMO officially named it, and it got the name Asperitas. So even though we had been fighting in America to name this kind of cloud type, they ended up getting the name and they called it Asperitas. So that's the technical official name for that cloud type, but it's all in the same, all encompassing. It's caused by, their gravity waves.
Right. And gravity is actually kind of a misnomer. So many things happen. And when we talk meteorology, we put words in that I think confuse sometimes even ourselves. Like you're talking about stable atmosphere. And to the average person, well, stable means I'm not moving. But actually in our realm, stable means that a parcel of air is actually moving up as it gets cooled and it continues to move up. That's stability. So even though what we think is stability is not really moving, stability is that we're really having an atmosphere that goes from warmer at the surface to cooler at the higher levels.
Stable in the vertical.
Right. Yep. So again, these are things that you're going to hear meteorology, and that's why sometimes meteorologist jargon and speak sometimes is confusing. And that's why I wanted to talk to you a little bit. So, but I'm right that is spring and then fall more likely to see these gravity wave clouds because we're moving that air more dynamically in the spring and the fall, one way or the other, right?
Yep, you're absolutely right. Yeah, and then during the summer months, usually you have a very well mixed atmosphere, and so you don't get those situations as often. So, yes.
Well, we're definitely moving air, Brett. Right now, we're looking at a pretty good cold shot coming into the Northeast as we're recording this Thursday into Friday, and so the Northeast, especially in New England and the Northeast, some of the coldest air again. You know, if you look and compare, you know, if this cold air were coming in January, the temperatures would be incredibly cold. But we're here in March; we've got March sun, and so while really cold for March, I think there's going to be some mitigation of that. But one thing that we're going to have is another kind of windy couple of days. And that's been something that we saw. We saw it at the beginning of this past week, a really tough wind event and a lot of cold. And we're going to see another one that lasts a few days in the Northeast. But if we are just patient in the Great Lakes in the Northeast, we've got some really nice warm air to come up into there for the beginning and middle of this upcoming week.
Yeah, there's going to be a pleasant ridge axis that's going to develop late this weekend and early next week. And that's really going to pump the warm air northward into the Great Lakes region and then eventually the East Coast. So it will turn a lot nicer, more spring-like as we go into the middle portion of the upcoming week.
Yeah, the folks in the middle of the country have been enjoying it this past week. My friends in St. Louis love me. Got them to about 70 in a couple of days here, and it looks like they're headed in that direction for the beginning of the week. So, yeah, and then the other remarkable thing, Brett, is just how quiet the weather became. You know, it's funny. We've had big events that have kind of flipped the pattern for about 3 or 4 weeks. And then the last big event that flipped the pattern, I think, was that big bowling ball of Arctic air that plunged all the way down. And now the atmosphere's, I think, still trying to sort itself out as to where it wants to go. We've seen this little pump of the ridge in the middle of the country, this little cold shot to the northeast here as we go into the weekend. And we're going to continue to see pieces of energy come into the Pacific Northwest. So that part of the equation doesn't change here as we go into the upcoming week.
Yeah, and we have a lot of Pacific air that basically has just flooded the lower 48. And that's significantly weakened the storm track. But also, as you said, the Northwest flow has weakened. We don't have an Arctic air mass spilling into the lower 48. And so therefore, we don't have to worry as much about these snow events that we have had in previous weeks, and ice events.
The biggest thing that we have, I think, coming forward is, you know, once we warm this up so much in the middle of the country and then the Northeast, there is an area of low pressure that I think we're going to have to watch that is going to be a mechanism that wants to fight back on this warmth. And so we've got snow on the northern flank, probably in the northern plains. Then we got severe weather, Chicago southward, ahead of that ridge. And that starts probably midweek Wednesday, where that area of low pressure is somewhere in the upper plains. And then that is going to go eastward. So we'll see that storminess go towards the East Coast as we get towards the end of the week. So we may finally see our first significant storm in over a week or so in the country here, middle of next week.
Yeah, that's going to be the battleground across the center of the country. You know, there will be some concern, you know, on the wintry side of it, where there will be some snow. But I think by and large, the severe weather could be the big concern as we go on the Wednesday, Thursday timeframe. across Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma. We'll have to certainly watch that.
Brett, I appreciate your time. I know you're busy. Thanks for telling us about gravity wave clouds and all that, and talking about the weather here over the next few days. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Dean.
If you'd like to learn more from the professor, Brett Rossio can be found on Twitter. You could look up his name, Brett Rossio. If you want to do his Twitter handle, it's Rossio Sond. Radio Sond is that piece of equipment that's on a weather balloon that helps give us the information about the atmospheric conditions as you release a weather balloon. So it's Rossio Sond, Rossiosond, as in David, E as in Edward. Rossio Sond is where you'll find the professor on Twitter. Thanks to Brett. Thanks to our guests in the up front segment there, our opening Rays of Focus segment, where we talked to Jeff Cornish, Becky DePodwin, Brian May, and of course our amazing executive producers, Andrew Robb and Ken Pro, who I thank here and thank every week. And I thank all of the hundreds of AccuWeather team members who've been working so hard. We've had a little bit of a break with the stormy pattern across the lower 48, but it looks like things are going to pick up, so we'll be getting busy again. Make sure you check out the AccuWeather.com app and the AccuWeather.com stories that have all the information you need in our AccuWeather Network and our great AccuWeather partners. I'll talk to you on the radio weekday mornings on some of those great radio stations as well. Next week, we're going to take a tour around the country with some of our great ABC partnered stations, the meteorologists there, and some other outlets as well. We're going to kind of tour around the country, talk about how winter treated every part of the country, some better than others. We're going to talk, too, about how it's been almost a year now since we turned everything on our head with the COVID situation and the way we talk about the weather. The way people live in these big cities and metropolitan areas has changed, too. So we're going to talk about that next week and what may be our last segment, our last episode of the winter series. For Ken and Andy and for all of our great AccuWeather team members across the world that keep you weatherproofed every day, please be safe and well, and we'll talk to you next week. Episode 14 of our winter series on everything under the sun from AccuWeather.com.